Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this afternoon is, to my right, Justice Ann Gardner. To my left, Justice Lee Gabriel. I'm Leanne Dofino. We have two cases set for oral submission today. The rest are submitted on briefs this week. And I understand that Joe Staley hasn't made it from Dallas yet, and that y'all are ready to leap into the breach, and then when he gets here, we'll hear his argument. So I understand y'all are ready. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, if you call the case, we'll get started.
May it please the court. My name is Georgiana Simpson. I do represent the father in this matter, Chad. I know the court's familiar with the briefs and has, I'm sure, read the facts in this situation. However, I want to point out a few facts and their pertinence and the reason they're particularly pertinent to this case. One is the date that the divorce was filed, which was January 5th, 2012. Please note in that petition that the mother did ask for a protective order as to the father and the child. However, she never pursued that protective order. In fact, the parties were able to reach an agreement later as to an agreement that they would basically stay away from each other. Then we had a temporary order hearing on February 29th of 2012. At that time, the father was granted visitation with his child, unsupervised. And because of the age of the child, it was 2.5 hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays and 4 hours on Sunday. Later, father sought an increase on May 23rd, 2013, and it was increased then to 5.5 hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays and 8 hours on Sunday, again, unsupervised. Then we had the trial on August 16th. All the visitation stopped. The jury entered a verdict, and they said, no mother appointed as sole managing, and father not appointed as any kind of conservator. And the judge then threw his hands in the air and says, well, because the jury did not appoint him as a possessory conservator, the court concluded I can't give possession and access, totally ignoring 105.002, which says that the court cannot pose a question to the jury regarding possession and access, and if for some reason it does and it's ruled upon, it's only advisory at best. So this father, since August 16th, he had no possession. We sought a JNOV, and then the court said no to that. And then we sought a motion for new trial. And the court looked at it again and said, I agree. It was a motion. I'm going to grant that motion for new trial and set it aside because I think that basically the father was deprived of his due process rights, and therefore I'm going to send it back for a new trial.
Can I stop? Interrupt you for a moment.
Yes, ma'am.
I had a question about whether there were any objections to the charge on the basis that you just mentioned, that the submission of father being possessory conservator, submission of it violated 105.002.
No, that wasn't, because the charge only did not address the possession and access. It only addressed whether the father should be appointed, who should be appointed as sole. And since mother got that, they didn't answer the joint question. And then it was, should father be appointed as the possessory conservator? And then they laid out the standard language from the code regarding possessory conservatorship, which tracks the language of 153.131. And says the court, it says basically the jury shall appoint the parent, shall appoint the parent as a possessory conservator unless it finds the appointment is not in the best interest of the child and that parental presumption or access would endanger the physical or emotional welfare of the child.
Possession or access.
Correct.
Okay.
Parental possession or access would endanger the physical or emotional welfare of the child. In response to that, they answered the question, no, that he should not be appointed as a possessory conservator. So presumably then that implies that the court found it was not in the best interest and that the parental presumption or access would endanger being the operative word, the physical and emotional welfare of the child. However, there was no evidence regarding endangerment. And therein is the problem, is because were these people ugly to each other? Yes. Did they push and shove each other? Yes. Did they say naughty things to each other? Yes. Did they provoke each other? Yes. I encourage, please look at all the videos, not just the cold hard records. We have video deposition here. We've got video clips. You know, they're equally at fault, and the jury found the father to be more at fault, obviously, because they had pointed him to nothing. He has no right to his child, even though he helped raise, without complaint, the mother's two older sons. And in fact, the mother, when asked about, well, how's the little boy doing at the trial? Oh, he's doing great. The older kids are doing great, and the little kid's doing great. However, the jury found that he was endangering the child, although the mother never sought a protective order. CPS was never called. The child was never taken to a doctor. The only time that you saw any kind of evidence of any problem with this child was a rash, diaper rash, that occurred during the mother's period of possession. So we have no evidence here. We have evidence of people going through a divorce and being nasty to each other. That's what we have. We do not have evidence of any kind of endangerment to the child. Well, what do we mean by endangerment? Well, about the only case that has really addressed that issue, where possessory conservatorship was not granted and where the evidence was laid out, is Hopkins v. Hopkins out of Corpus Christi. That's cited in both the appellee's brief and in our reply brief. In Hopkins, the court decided not to grant father possessory conservatorship, but did grant the father some limited periods of possession. And I'm going to read to the court, if you'll indulge me, what the evidence was in that court, in that case, which is, there's few cases where you can find this. In fact, when I looked it up on the annotations, this was the only case that was cited that laid out all the evidence. The evidence shows that the appellant has been convicted of delivery of controlled substances, used drugs in front of the children, physically abused the appellee when she was 8 months pregnant with their youngest child, physically assaulted her on other occasions, causing fluid to seep from her ear and separating her ribs, twice threatened appellee with a gun, denied appellee and the oldest child medical attention, hit the oldest child on numerous occasions, and yanked him around by the ear to discipline him. The evidence also shows appellant would neglect to feed or bathe the children when they were in his care. He would leave them alone in the car or at home when he would go to the hospital to visit appellee. The oldest child suffered a head injury while in the appellant's care. The appellant left the oldest child alone in a car, and the child started the motor. Furthermore, the house was so unsanitary that the bathroom could only be used for the breeding of the cats. So this is the type of evidence that was required to show endangerment. That's not what we have here. So, yes, I encourage the court to please review the file very carefully, because this is very fact-intensive.
We've seen some of the videos, the records, full records on our computers.
Yeah. And the the only person without a dog in this hunt being Dr. Goodness, testified this guy's not perfect. He had a brain injury, but it's not the kind that he has some frustrations, what have you, but he wasn't violent, and he should be allowed to parent a child. And so here we have the only person without a dog in the hunt that encouraged parenting, and the father be allowed to parent the child. And here, not only is the father not being allowed to parent the child in any form or fashion, he doesn't even have the most minimal access and periods of possession that we would give to some of our more child molesters. So, there are ways to carve. It says, and even if you find that there was, that maybe the jury, you somehow could divine from this evidence that there was endangerment, the father should not then still be precluded from possession and access. I think that is up to the court, not the jury, to decide. And the court just basically said, because of the jury verdict, I can't do anything. So we have a problem with what the judge did, even if somehow the facts got them to where they needed to go, is when you deny all possession and access to the child, then you raise the level once again to extreme circumstances. Okay, even the facts I just read you, the father still got some periods of possession with the child. So, I mean, that's what my concern is. Is not only did we take away possessory conservatorship, so he doesn't even get to know if the child is in an accident. He's not entitled to that information, not in even in an emergency. He doesn't get that information. He doesn't even the most rudimentary rights that we would give to any parent, he doesn't have, except for the ability to pay child support. You know, that's why a mandamus was filed in this court on our fourth issue, which was it's basically a de facto termination. Because in a termination, what do you have to do to get a termination? You got to show endangerment. You know, so you have to show abuse and neglect of the child. Here, there was no showing of abuse or neglect of the child. Yes, I will admit, this record will show, that this man said some ugly things to the child's mother. At least a couple occasions, it was done in front of a two-year-old child. Okay, I doubt seriously, and they had no evidence to show, that the couple of times that they have on video showing him being particularly ugly to mama, verbally ugly, that this traumatized the child to such a degree that the child was emotionally and physically endangered. So, one, I don't think the evidence supports it. And I know my prayer is very general. I did ask for a remand. Hopefully the court will let me amend. I would like the court to render as to at least possessory conservatorship, and alternatively to remand for an entire new trial on the conservatorship altogether. At a minimum, I would ask for a remand for the judge to reconsider the possession and access. However, I would like the court to reconsider this issue regarding if two and three, if neither one of those are overturned, then we do get to four. Because four is that this basically you can now terminate a parent except for his ability to pay child support. And yes,
the ability to file a motion to modify and come back to court. This does not permanently terminate his parental rights to that child.
Termination is not permanent now either. This court has recently held in an adoption case that even though the mother's rights were terminated, she can go back and readopt the child if she can meet the qualifications. But to meet a qualifications on modification of conservatorship, you have to show material substantial change in circumstances. It's kind of hard to do when you have absolutely no access to the child, no right to get them you have to meet that qualification on the day that you file. But it's very hard to show material substantial change in circumstances when father is given no access, even the right to have medical.
A change in his circumstance? Like, I've gone to counseling. I've taken my medication. I've done all the things that Dr. Goodness and other people told me to do that would get me to a point that now I will not endanger my child. Wouldn't that be sufficient to go back to court and file a motion to modify?
Theoretically, yes, Your Honor. I would agree with that, theoretically. But he would have to wait, I think, for at least a year to go back because he would not have any chance to have any access to this child. That's the problem with issue four. And I understand being the one about the due process rights. But when you're talking about underneath the, if you have to show endangerment to be able to not to be a possessory conservator, and then you add that on to not having possession access, raising it to the level of extreme circumstances, that's bordering on termination. I'm just saying if you read those provisions together, they're almost virtually identical to what you have to prove to get a termination. Therein lies the problem. I do believe there's not enough evidence. There's no evidence to support endangerment. Okay, then if you get past that, if for some reason the court determines there is some, although none has been pointed out that it rises to the level of endangerment, then you have the extreme circumstances. And even under Hopkins, you can't get there because there's no evidence of this type of behavior in this case.
In that case, the court allowed visitation and the appeal was brought on whether the trial court erred in allowing visitation, correct?
Actually, it was brought on that, and the court determined that it was since it was conflicting because it first took away the visitation, it first took away possessory conservatorship, then allowed visitation, the court on appeals determined that was contradictory. So it sent it back to the trial court to basically come up, to resolve the conflict. But again, here we took away possessory conservatorship and gave no possession and access, and it was based solely on the judges because the quote at the time was, is this what you're saying, judges? Yes, the jury tied my hands by basically not appointing his possessory conservator. I have no right to give him possession and access. I don't think that's what Hopkins stands for. I don't think that's what the current code says. So that's the problem that we're presenting to this court. is one is really what constitutes endangerment so that you can't be appointed as a possessory conservator. And then if you don't rise to the level of being able to be appointed a possessory conservator, what do you have to do to then have also have your possession and access taken away? So can the jury make that decision simply by answering a question and take away all of your possession and access? I don't think that's the intent of the Family Code. I think the Family Code has to be read as a whole, and we have a provision that specifically says a parent shall get possession and access, although it needs to be tailored for this suit. Up until this time, after the motion for new trial was granted, the court gave him 4 more months of visitation until this court's ruling on the mandamus saying you have to set aside the motion for new trial. So the visitation was taken away on that date. Again, there was 4 months with no CPS complaints, with no request for protective order, no request for emergency
orders.
You
can't really look at that because that's not evidence in the record on this appeal.
Well, we have 4 more months of visitation.
That's still not evidence in the record, in our record that we're looking at on this appeal. We're looking at the trial, so we can't really consider that, can we?
Well, I think the court can consider the post-trial things where there were no pleadings filed. Because I think if somebody was called CPS or there was emergency action, that at least at a very minimum, the court would have had to hear about it and it would have been reported to CPS. The lawyers would have had to report if there had been some sort of endangerment to the child. That's what I'm saying. At least there's nothing evident from the record before this court or the trial court for that matter that could do anything other than set the order aside once this court ruled. And I see that I'm out of my time. Thank you all very much.
Wait, I do have a question.
Oh, yes,
just
ma'am.
A quick one, just to follow up on that. During that period of time, that 4 months, the judgment had been set aside by the trial court by granting the motion for new trial, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so there was no final judgment, no appellate timetables were running. The case was still in the judge's court.
Correct, because okay. It had gone up on mandamus, and that was done while the court still had plenary power.
Right, okay, thanks.
May it please the court and counsel. I would like to start off with issue number 3, where she's talking about when he's not appointed a possessory conservator, that this court or the trial court still had the ability to grant him possession and access. And she does cite 153-193, but I think that Father is ignoring the entirety of the Family Code. Because when you go back and you look at 153.193 that talks about the minimal restrictions that you can put, it is specifically under the subchapter that says a parent appointed as a possessory conservator. So for a parent to have the right to have possession and access, they first have to meet that first prerequisite to be a possessory conservator. And that's why the court correctly ruled that when the jury made the findings that he was not going to be appointed a possessory conservator, then there was no possession and access that he was allowed to grant. So I think when you take those together, and then when you look at Hopkins, the problem in that case was the reason that the court found that there was a problem because the trial court there did not appoint him a possessory conservator, but gave him access. And then when you look at Walters, they also talk about they also talk about a possessory conservator and that to appoint a possessory conservator could not allow the parent access to the child because in refusing to appoint a parent possessory conservator, the trial court must have found that the possession or access is not in the best interest of the child. So it is, if when he finds that he's not a possessory conservator, you cannot give them any possession or access. And as far as the evidence in this case, one, we just have to prove that there's a scintilla of the evidence, but the jury is the one that makes the determination as to the weight of the evidence and the credibility of the evidence since they were in the courtroom and watching and seeing all the videos. And I think it's clear that they believed everything that mom had to say and that a child is not emotionally abused or put in emotional endangerment when mom is holding the child and father comes and bites mom is ludicrous to me. And to continue to, each time that you have these videos, He knows he's being videoed. He knows he's in the middle of a custody battle. He knows that's going to be. He's on his absolute best behavior at that point in time. He knows it's going to be seen. And so what I think the jury could kind of infer, what's he acting like when he's not in front of the camera? Additionally, when Dr. Goodness is going through and doing her evaluation, she makes the statement, these people are on their best behavior when they come to me and I'm making these evaluations. And he, on his best behavior, gets angry and throws the blocks at one of the people doing the testing. Another time, he's actually angry and screaming and yelling and cursing at one of the people that is in giving the testing. Also, Dr. Goodness said, you need to have counseling. You need to see a psychologist. You need to go in and be taking medication and do these things to help you in parenting this child. He fails to do that. For the whole time that we're going through the temporary orders leading up to, he doesn't do it. And I think that's one of the reasons that the jury finds that it's not in the best interest, because this father does not acknowledge he has a problem. He does not acknowledge he has anger management. And so he's not going to get any better. He's not going to try to make his behavior or curb his behavior to be a better parent for this child. And so I think that's one of the things that the jury did. And I think you were exactly right, Justice Gabriel, that in a motion to modify, he has that ability. In this case, which is distinguished from some of the cases that they cite, he has 100% control over his actions. And if he went back and he got the counseling he needed and he was on the medication, that would be a material change in circumstance. And I think that then he would have a modification and be a possessory conservator. And, you know, throughout the trial, that was one of the things that we would anticipate that he would be doing, that he would be going and getting that type of help. Additionally, when you look at under their point three of all of the cases they cite regarding possessory conservator having access, all of the cases they cite, somebody's named a managing conservator or a possessory conservator. There's only one case that they cite, which is the Green case, and that case is very similar to this one, where they did not appoint the father the possessory conservator and they did not give him access, and that case was upheld. And actually, when they made the same argument that it was a de facto termination, the court specifically said, I think it was, that was a novel concept, but there was nothing to back that up. And so that's one of the only cases that I can see where they don't appoint somebody a possessory conservator. But under the possessory conservator, he's not a possessory conservator, so he doesn't get any access, so we don't think that there should be any change to the order. It should be upheld. And unless you have any other questions, I think I've briefed everything and communicated to you that.
I was just going to ask if Dr. Goodness, didn't she say, and correct me please if I'm wrong, that the head injury that he had would tend to make him not believe that he had sufficient problem to get help, or was that just for alcohol?
That was one of the things that I think she called them deficiencies, is that he would not recognize that there would be a problem. And so he doesn't recognize that he has anger management. He doesn't recognize that he has an alcohol problem. He doesn't recognize that he has impulse control. He doesn't recognize those things. And the additional problem in this case is his mom, who is, you know, his help, his aide, does not recognize that he has these problems either. If she could help and say, you need to be getting this help, you need to be seeing a psychologist, counseling. And actually, I think when you even look at the videos, and Mr. Eames was questioning him regarding the videos, he says, my behavior was totally appropriate. Everything I was doing there is fine. And so there's no change. And in some of those videos, you see him actually moving his arm and pushing her back and pushing her back. I think I over-answered your question.
No, you answered it. Thank you.
Thank you. Georgiana?
Just a quick follow-up. Please run the appellee's brief through a checking words, and you'll not find the word endangerment anywhere in their brief. It's because they couldn't quote you any enough sufficient testimony to get to endangerment. And that's a big issue here, because until you get to endangerment, you don't get possessory conservatorship. And this court is, although the trial court on its face may not be able to grant a JNOV, and I'm not going to, I've made my argument in issue one, but this court can certainly grant a JNOV and can render that he should be possessory. But at the very, very least, this court can remand for a new order on conservatorship. It's going to be up to this court to finally give us a definitive opinion regarding this. There's no case law out there that really answers this question. Is when you take away, one, what is the level that you have to prove to completely take away all rights and duties from a parent short of termination? Okay, that's what this is.
Would you argue that endangerment has the same meaning in this situation as it has in a real termination case, a regular termination case?
Endangerment is
D and E sections.
I'm sorry.
I'm referring to sections D and E of 161.
It's not defined. That's part of the problem. And the only case that I could find that addressed it was the Hopkins case, and the facts were certainly egregious there. I think the facts probably warranted a possible termination. But that's not what happened, you know, even in that case. So that's what my concern is, yes, I want my client to be appointed a possessory conservator without having to go back and be 10, you know, even 100 yards behind the line to start with. But even short of that, to be given some possession and access, which he freely had throughout the entire time. And watch that video. Yeah, he had the child, and he was trying to ask her a question, and he was moving away and pushing her away because he wanted his question answered. You can interpret those videos. You know, it was up to the jury. I get that. But I still just don't think there's any evidence of the endangerment. And then, okay, you have something take away possessory, but does that mean he gets no access to the child, even restricted access, even supervised access? Well, I don't really have an answer to that. It is under that subchapter. But it's noted that still that a parent, it's still saying this is what it would take to deprive a parent of possession and access. And in the Hopkins case, even under those horrible circumstances, the parent was still granted some possession and access. Yes, it was sent back for the trial court to go back and reconcile the situation. I don't know what happened in the Hopkins case after it was sent back. But I think this is something that this court needs to address. We need this case so that all family law practitioners and everybody in this situation knows what the law is, because it is not clear. And now I have a father that has no possession and access in the most rudimentary rights to even know if his child has been taken to an emergency room. So with this, again, I would ask this court to reverse and render as to the possessory conservatorship, but at a minimum, send it back for a new trial on conservatorship. And unless you have questions, I want to thank you for your time and for listening so attentively today. But please give us the law. We need to know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your argument. It has been very helpful. Your case is submitted. And you're free to go about your business, or you may stay in the courtroom and watch the next case be argued if you'd like. It is up to you.